All right, you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch. I am here with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You're about to hear Radio Naturopath for the next hour. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. And you can also text us at that number, 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, check out our podcast at www.whus.org. Go to the talk header and click on Radio Naturopath. You can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath, and on Twitter and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. All right, so let's get to it. So one of the things that I notice at this time of year, one of the things that has just happened that's kind of a big deal is, first of all, before we go anywhere, we want to do a shout out to the people of Texas, Houston, and the floods.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And it looks like they have even more damage than they were expecting.
At least twice as much damage as what they had anticipated.
So a lot of rain, a lot of flooding. The rain continues. People are out of their homes. Some people have lost their lives. It's a really awful situation.
It really is. It's you can't prepare for stuff like that.
Really
can't. You know, it's just it came on. They said it was like an 800-year flood or something crazy like that.
It's really.
So you know, I mean, how do you prepare for something you haven't seen in 800 years?
And is it sort of deserty in Texas? Don't they have like not a lot of ways to absorb the water?
And
that's part of the problem?
Well, that's part of the problem. But the other part of the problem is Houston, you know, all these towns, they all sit at sea level.
Right.
So, where's the water going to go? It's going to go up. That's all it's going to do. It's going to go up. And when you get, 30 inches of rain to drop on you or 100 inches of rain, somebody said at one point, I mean, it's just crazy how much rain they've had.
Yeah.
And there's just no place for it to go.
Well, it's like the storm stalled. It did like a nor'easter thing.
It did what we get in the wintertime here sometimes,
right.
Where it just spins in circles and circles and circles.
And keeps picking up water off of the Gulf.
And nor'easters that we get here in the winter are very similar to hurricanes in the fact that they generate a lot of wind and they twirl in a big circle. They're very circular. So they're very similar in many ways to a hurricane, but it's winter, so they're called nor'easters.
And they don't have as high winds.
Some have not as high as a hurricane does, but a tropical storm, absolutely.
Yeah.
Certainly as much as a tropical storm.
Right, sure.
So they get gale force winds during nor'easters.
Yeah, we've been lucky the last few years. We had a few years ago where we had Superstorm Sandy and we had Irene and we had a few bad issues and we had snow in October. And so we had a few bad things. The last couple of years have been good. We were out of power for over a week, and we've been lucky the last couple of years. Last year when I was in Florida, we had Matthew, and Matthew was no fun. I mean, Orlando closed down. I wasn't able to go to Epcot.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that won't happen again, my trip to Florida this year.
And I flew out just in time, didn't I? Wasn't the one where I had left just before it hit?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That was,
It was in the process of hitting when I flew out.
And we're only up to M. So now Harvey is H. So, we've been through a few. And Gert was just kind of fun because I don't think Gert hurt anybody. It went out to sea, but it gave us nice waves.
And a funny name.
And a funny Gert. Yeah, sir.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny name,
For Gertrude, Some people out there
still
are called Gertrude.
It's true, but it's just an unusual name, that's all.
Yeah, right. Very
okay.
Good. All right, so we wanted to shout out to the people of Houston. So the other thing, one of the things that just happened is we came to campus, and the campus is overrun by students.
Oh, boy, is it ever.
Which is normal. So,
right. Well, we have a 20,000 person increase in town right now.
And it's going on right now.
And it's happening. Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of students in school. The other thing that's happening is kids are going back to school. Younger kids are going back to public school. And so I saw last week beginning. So one of the things I noticed is that it seems like the cold and flu season starts earlier and earlier. And the last year or two, I have noticed that people start coming in sick bang, the minute anybody walks into a school, I start seeing people with colds. I feel like there's cold season in July right now, really, because I see people sick. They're still getting sick in April. And, you know, then I see all these people with these bronchitis and sinusitis that last for 2 months. And that's common. I don't think I used to see that, but I started seeing that in the last 10 years. I see that a lot more commonly. And I'm not sure what's going on there, if there's just more environmental issues, if there's more, you know, if it's related to climate change, because climate change is going to change the amount of carbon dioxide in the air, so you're going to get more pollen. The things that are creating climate change, the pollution. So when you have pollution in the air, unfortunately, you have free radical damage to your respiratory system. And so if you keep breathing in things that are causing free radical damage, it's going to be harder to heal. And people are stressed, and people are probably not eating 100% the best, and so their bodies are not getting a break, so their immune systems are not able to overcome these things, you know. And of course, the kids come in, they go to school, and as soon as they all get around each other, it's just very hard to keep away from the germs because there's overexposure. Little kids, of course, they're not going to have the hygiene thing down where they're wiping their noses and wiping it on other things, and other kids pick up the germs and off you go. And once the little kids have the germs, of course, the parents get it, and then the parents spread it to each other in their places of work, and off you go. And it's so I'm just seeing
that. There we go. Yeah.
And I'm seeing both respiratory illnesses and GI bugs. I'm seeing them both. So they're really easy to spread. So I just wanted to remind people to one of the things about this time of year too is you never know if it's going to rain or not, because the weather gets more unstable. But the other thing is, when it's not raining, you can get some really, really gorgeous weather. We were in Maine this weekend, and it was like heaven. It was incredible. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't too cold. We had beautiful, clear skies, and we were near the ocean, and it was very healing. I found being in that environment very healing. It makes me think that we need to go just have a walk on the beach over this upcoming Labor Day weekend. It's just so beautiful. I just really, really, really enjoyed it. It's just clear skies, and riding my bike in that environment was just phenomenal.
It was amazing. So, the air was just so clear.
Yeah.
It's just really amazing.
So don't forget, I want to remind people that it's a good idea, a couple things. It's a good idea to get outside this time of year, because soon it's going to get cold and you won't want to as much. But right now, September can be one of the most glorious months in New England, because you get those days where you have beautiful weather, you have, you know, 60s and 70s and low humidity and a lot of clear skies, and you can just get those absolutely wonderful days. So it's a wonderful time to be outside, whether you exercise in it or not, even if you just sit outside or just go somewhere where you can go for a walk in the woods and look at some flowers, look at some trees, or go down to the beach. Even if you're not going to sit on the beach and go swimming, it's still a great thing to go be by the ocean. It's really good for you. And you get negative ions there. Remember, the negative ion thing is where you have agitated air and or water, where you have molecules banging against each other, and they give off electrons. And inflammatory compounds tend to be positively charged. So if you have more electrons around, you're going to shore up those positively charged free radical causing ions in your body, and so you get the negative ions, and you basically breathe them in, and they get on your skin, and they help to heal things. And this is not just this is not esoteric. This is actually scientifically based. So there are ways to get negative ions. It's great to go to the ocean, because you have waves where the water is banging against each other. Waterfalls work too. Being in the mountains, where the air is a little more rarefied, so you have molecules banging against each other there. The air's a little more, it's not as quite as dense. If you're up at 1,000, 2,000 feet, the air's a little less dense than it is at sea level.
Well, it'll be less humid too, probably, if you're
less humid too.
Higher elevations.
Yes, and so the molecules there are going to bang against each other. The other thing is, when you're in a pristine place, a place where there's no pollution, there's less molecules in the air. So the molecules are further apart from each other, and there's a thing called Brownian motion. You know what Brownian motion is?
No.
Okay, Brownian motion is if you have particles in a solution, so that means molecules in air or particles in water, they're going to move around and they're going to take up, they're going to fill up the space. They're not going to cluster in one little area. They're going to move around and take up the space. You know how, like when you get on the plane, people tend to sit, they tend to spread out.
Yeah.
And then you fill in later,
right.
But people start by filling out. That it's the nature of an object to want to take up space, to have space around it, whether it's a person or a molecule. Yeah. So Brownian motion applies in solutions, and it's where the molecules are going to move around, and they're going to take up the space as opposed to clustering together. They tend not to agglutinate like. Some molecules do tend to agglutinate. So in your body, there's an advantage to some things agglutinating at specific times. But if you're just a random molecule, you're going to take up space. So molecules tend to do that when they're in air and when they're in solution, in water. So when they move around like that to take up space, they're going to be running around. And eventually, they are going to bump into each other, and they're going to give off electrons. And when they do that, you benefit. Those electrons are good for you. So that's why, you're going to have agitated water when you're by the ocean. And you're going to have air that's going to be agitated as well, because you got these molecules. You got the electrons coming off the water and then getting into the air. And then you benefit from that. The other way you can get electrons is to lie on the ground. So if it's not too cold, you can do that. Just lie on the ground. If you can have some exposed skin on the ground, that's even better. But not necessarily. So you expose as much skin as you can. What I tell people to do in the winter is take your gloves off and just put your hands on a tree. And that will get you some negative ions. Yeah, it'll get you some negative ions. It's still good for you to go out. It's good for you to go outside whenever. This weekend when we were away, we opened all the windows and we had nice fresh air coming through.
We did. So it was nice, wasn't it?
Yes. So if we have issues with dust and mold and, indoor pollution, we're going to sweep some of that out. We're going to get some of the fresh air coming through. And again, we're going to get the, not only did the air smell good, but we're getting the benefit of negative ions as well. So you open the air, open the windows, you're going to get negative ions more so than if you keep your windows shut.
So negative ions are a positive thing.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Is that okay?
You said it. It's all true. So remember to get outside. And the thing is, one of the things that happens is people get very busy this time of year. They get back to school. They get serious. That summer is done. They get serious. They get back into their books. Remember, that's why I want to remind people that it's really important to continue to get outside. And, even if it's to just go for a walk or do some of your studying outside or take a break and get out there. Whether you exercise in it or not, don't think of it necessarily as exercise. Being outside is very important. Being outside will help you to not get sick. That's the other thing, because those inflammatory compounds that you tend to make from getting sick, they're going to be, you're going to get some neutralization from being outside. So the other thing is to remember to do stuff to prevent illness. Don't forget to wash your hands. Use hand sanitizer. I have great hand sanitizer that I'm really happy with. One of the things that people notice when they come into my office is that they walk in and they go, oh, it smells so good in here. And it's not just because they like the way it smells. It's almost like there's a spiritual aspect to it smells so good in here. And the reason that they're saying that is because I use hand sanitizer that has lavender in it. So the lavender scent is really lovely. It's very refreshing. It's cleansing. And I don't just mean cleansing in an esoteric sense. I mean, it actually has antimicrobial properties. So that's part of why it's in the hand sanitizer. So I find that using that hand sanitizer is really helpful. And if you get a hand sanitizer from the health food store, you can get one that's free of polyethylene glycol. You can get it with natural scents like lavender or lemon, which are very refreshing. I've often thought maybe I'll try getting lemon, but I don't think so because of the way that people react to the lavender. And the lavender's nice all year. I think lemon is more refreshing in the summer, in the warmer months, the citrus stuff. I mean, it always smells good to me, but I'm like, this is one of those things. Even though I might like to change it up, it's probably a good idea to if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, the lavender's a really good thing. I do want to try, I would love to try having hand sanitizer with ylang ylang in it, which it's a scent that I love. It's a very healing.
It's ylang ylang.
It's a really healing scent. It's a plant. It's just a really nice essential oil. It mm-hmm. smells really good. Okay. It smells different than lavender. Mm-hmm. And it's energizing. It's anti-inflammatory. And people tend to like that too.
And it's called ylang ylang. Ylang
with a Y. Mm-hmm. Y-L-A-N-G. Yep. Twice. Yeah, it's really lovely scent. Kind of romantic too.
Ooh, maybe I should get some.
Wondered if I should try. We have some at home. I wonder if I should try it in my office. The lavender is a classically healing scent, so I may just stick with that. I don't know, but I might do the ylang ylang experiment one day and do a lemon experiment another day and see what people say.
Comes from a tropical tree that originates in Indonesia.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it was eventually spread to Malaysia and the Philippines.
Yeah.
It's valued for the perfume extracted from its flowers.
Yeah. Mm. So there's tropical stuff that smells really good that comes from Indonesia and Sri Lanka. That's where cinnamon comes from. They grow cinnamon down there.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So you get, I think what it is you get... plants down there that can have a longer growing season, so they can develop more aspects of themselves, so they can develop stronger scents and things.
Yeah, it's also commonly grown in Madagascar, Polynesia, Micronesia,
yeah,
and the Comoros Islands.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so down in the South Pacific.
Temperate climates.
Yes.
That's what it is.
In the South Pacific. So. Bali High, cool. I will call you. That's south from South Pacific.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Nice.
Right.
Hey, I have a point to make as far as medical stuff goes.
Okay.
Okay, now that we're back and we see all these students wandering around and they're everywhere, how about chiropractic problems with neck issues? Do you know where I'm? Do you know where I'm going with this?
That's a good idea. I think what I'd like to do is wrap up the cold and flu thing first.
Oh yes, please.
Yes,
absolutely.
We're still talking about that.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to remind people that washing your hands, using hand sanitizer, is a really good thing. There have been good studies on hand sanitizer in physicians showing that. Physicians that use hand sanitizer are cleaner and get sick less often.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm good for maybe a cold a year. I had a bad one last year. I hope I don't go there again.
Don't go there. You weren't much fun.
Oh, it was. I was so sick. My goodness, I had a really good fever for a week, and really bad bronchitis. I needed to take albuterol. It was really rough.
You know, I'm no picnic when I'm sick, but when the doctor gets sick, it's tough.
It was tough. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. But they were so nice to me at the walk-in stores.
They were.
They were really
very
nice.
And then I
got better. And the thing that really helped me was the trip to Florida. That sealed the deal. So
big thumbs up to UConn Health Services.
Yes. And also to Mommy. Everyone needs
That's
Mommy
mom,
now and again.
Mom and chicken soup, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was Mom and... fresh oranges and lemons.
Mm.
Yeah, I may have to do another February trip again this year. That was really...
That worked for you.
Really worked for me. Yeah. I think I'm going to do
That's
that
good.
Again. Yeah. I think we're going to do a February trip. We're going to do a New Year's trip as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe another Maine trip. Maybe not this year.
That
but
would be
back
nice.
Again in the... We could do it in the fall. It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
We'll just schlep up
You seem
there
to like Portland, so...
Oh, yeah. I
cool
did.
City. Very cool.
And I liked riding my bike around Freeport. And you didn't get to ride your bike, so.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So this is the other thing. One of the things that happens is the days are getting shorter. We're not on that really steep slope where you're losing light at either end of the day really quickly, but that's going to happen.
Yeah, it is.
Soon. It's going to happen in October and November.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be on that really steep slope, and then it'll level out when you get into late November, into December, and then you'll actually start gaining light again when you get to – it's early in December that you actually start gaining light.
Yeah.
At the days do continue to get shorter, and you start losing light – you continue to lose light in the morning, but you actually start gaining minutes at the end of the day at around December 7th. But yeah, we're going to go on that slope, and that's hard for people when you lose light like that, because sunshine helps you to make thyroid hormone. It helps you to make melatonin. It helps you to make serotonin, and it helps you to make vitamin D, all of which can help to promote immunity. Mm-hmm. So when you get less sunlight, you make less of those things. And that's another factor. People move indoors this time of year. And I think we tend to move indoors too quickly, that it's not governed by the weather as much as it's governed by what's going on. School started, or, programs. It's not just school. There's other things that start as well. Just different work situations, and people start things in September when the summer ends. People get serious about stuff in a lot of realms in public life. And so people tend to move indoors too quickly, and they tend to forget that, going outside is still a thing. And so when you're on top of each other, when you don't get as much sunlight, and your immune system can suffer from that. So that's why I say get back outdoors and watch out for eating too much starch and sugar, because eating too much starch and sugar slows down the functioning of your white blood cells. And when it gets cold, what do you tend to want to do? You tend to want to eat more food and more carbohydrates. And those things, especially if they're simple carbohydrates, they slow down the functioning of your immune system. And then we have that great carbohydrate celebration at the end of October.
No, yeah.
So, Halloween is pediatricians' dream, because they get real busy the week after Halloween.
Oh, my God, I bet.
Kids get sick on candy. They get both tummy stuff and they get immune stuff.
Yeah.
So one of the things to make sure you do is don't eat too much sugar. If you want sweet stuff, there's better choices. One thing to do is there's still some fruit available. I want to go make sure that we haven't seen the last of the peaches. I made a beautiful peach
It's good. Crisp. I've been eating that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
I put peaches and we had some blueberries left. Mm. I threw blueberries in there and ginger. And peach ginger is really yummy. So you're going to get the benefit, all the nutrients from the peaches and the fiber, and you're going to get the anti-inflammatory benefits from the ginger. And peach and ginger, they're just a lovely, they really
mix well.
Complement each other.
Yeah, they do.
Yes.
Yep.
And so if you make a crisp and you put just a little bit of maple syrup in it, and then your topping, you can use organic butter, you can use coconut oil, and mix that. We make it gluten-free, so we use gluten-free flour and we use gluten-free oats, and we put that together, and then we bake it, and it just comes out, and it's of course, cinnamon.
Yeah.
I hope I put cinnamon in. I usually do.
I don't know. It tasted good.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter whether it's in there or not. It tasted great the
way
it is.
So the peaches, you use the peaches until the peaches are done, and then the apples, there are apples now. There are apples done. When we were in Maine, there were definitely ripe apples up there. There were trees. I'm like, is anybody eating those apples? The trees just full of ripe apples, and I didn't know if anybody was eating them. It seems a shame.
Well, they're here too. The same place we get our the Bluebird Farm.
Yeah.
That we get our peaches from, and our corn from, they also have apples. And they had some, I think, 2 weeks ago at the farmer's market. They had some early apples.
So the apples are coming out.
So they're coming out too. So,
yeah,
visit your local farmer's markets. You really want to take advantage right now. They're plentiful. It's really great.
We've still got tomatoes. The tomatoes are still coming out. And as far as, I was talking to someone today who was like, summer is truly over. It's not.
No, not even close.
Summer's not over until September 21st. I know we're getting tastes of fall because we have some cool weather. Ron and I are sitting here in long pants and long sleeves.
Air conditioning.
Well, I'm actually in three-quarter sleeves and three-quarter pants.
We are also sitting in artificial climate here, too.
Yeah.
We're in air conditioning because we're in a radio station where there's lots of hot machinery.
Yeah, but it's not going to get too I think it's going to get into the 70s today, but not too far into the 70s.
No.
Yeah, so, and Friday it's going to be downright chilly. It's going to barely hit 70 here. Yeah,
wow.
But this is not the last of the warm weather. I mean, we're still going to see 70s. We might even see 80s. I don't know.
It happens. We always get a little blast. So, we're not even close. We're not even close to done.
Yeah, but
we're
but
not done until I say so.
That's right. But produce-wise, we still got a lot going on, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
So, the farmers markets, as you said, are a really good idea. And availing yourself of the stuff at the farmers market, especially because you're moving indoors, it's a really good idea to get over to those farmers markets, because you're going to get the produce, and the produce is going to help to keep you healthy. Because when you move indoors and your life gets busy, one of the things that can go by the wayside is cooking.
Right.
And so remembering to eat your produce, your vegetables and fruit, and your your leafy greens, that's really important to continue to do. And this might be the time of year. You definitely want to wash your hands a lot, you know, mm-hmm. And wash your hands as often as you can think of it. I mean, you don't have to go crazy over it, but, you know, if you were somewhere where there were a lot of people.
The student union.
Yeah. Where you're, you might want to carry some hand sanitizer with you or go to the bathroom and wash. Mm-hmm. The more you can remember to wash, the less likely you are to get sick, because it's very simple. Somebody sneezes or coughs, the droplets get onto a surface, you touch the surface, you touch your face, you get sick. And you can get sick with a fecal-oral contaminated illness, like a stomach bug, and you can get sick with a droplet infection from somebody coughing or sneezing.
That's it. I'm buying a bubble.
Okay. You can do that. But you could do that. But the other thing you can do is also clean your nose and your throat out.
Yeah.
And this is probably a good idea to start making it a habit to use your neti pot and gargle. Mm-hmm. And so you can gargle. It can be as simple as salt water. Salt water goes a long way if you do salt water. And if you do that 1 to 2 times a day, you're probably going to, reduce your chances of getting sick, because, you have about a 48-hour window after exposure before you actually get sick. So if you're using a neti pot or gargling every 12 hours, you're probably going to hit it. You know,
yeah.
And so it's very simple. The microorganisms collect in the back of your throat and in your nose. And if you're cleaning them regularly, you're going to be less likely to get sick. And if the neti pot is not for you, there's other things you can do. You can just snort some salt water in the shower. That's called nasal lavage.
Mm-hmm.
You can also use nasal sprays. And I don't mean the steroid nasal sprays.
No, that's a really nice one that you got me. I really like that one. That's nice.
So the steroid nasal sprays are problematic. So if your nasal spray, if the drug in your nasal spray ends in zone, like mometasone or fluticasone, also budesonide is a steroid as well. It doesn't end in zone, but it's also a steroid. But you're usually the things that your nasal sprays are either fluticasone or mometasone. And those are steroids. They're not the kind of steroids that, make you big in the gym.
They don't pump you up?
No, they're the opposite. They're catabolic steroids. They break you down.
Ooh.
They literally do the opposite.
Well, why would you want to use those?
The only thing that makes something a steroid is there's a particular chemical ring structure in it. If it has the ring structure, it's a steroid. But some steroids build you up and some steroids break you down. So cortisol is a steroid and it
right.
breaks you down. Why do you want something to break you down? Because
yeah.
you need a compound in your body to break down tissue to use for energy. There's a purpose to it.
Okay.
But it also happens that cortisol runs your immune system, you do need inflammation to occur to fight infections. So you do need something to break stuff down. So so if you have a little bit of cortisol or cortisone, a small amount of it stimulates your immune system. Too much of it suppresses the immune system. That's why it's used. But the nature of cortisone and cortisol is that it breaks down tissue. You shoot out cortisol into your body to do stuff, to do fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
So it breaks down tissue. It breaks down sugar molecules. It breaks down glycogen to give you glucose. It puts sugar into your blood. It'll take it from your tissues and put it into your blood so that you can run around and do stuff. And it will also break down proteins. It'll break down anything.
But that's something that's natural and within your body.
Right.
You have that within your body. So how do you stimulate that to make that happen?
How do you get cortisol to break down tissue for you?
Yeah.
You decide that you're going to run around, or you decide that or you feel stress.
Okay.
When you feel stressed, your body responds by secreting cortisol.
Oh.
So if you decide you're going to get up and walk over there, I just moved my arm. I'm
yeah.
using cortisol to do that. Anytime you do anything, cortisol's involved.
Wow.
Yeah. So
okay.
The less stuff you do, the mm-hmm. less you use cortisol. But if you're running around doing stuff all the time, you're going to use your cortisol. And cortisol, you only have so much cortisol. So if you're running around doing stuff all the time, you're more likely to get sick. Why? Because cortisol stimulates your immune system, and it can't always do two things at once. So if you're sick, you want to lie down so that your immune system can take care of your illness.
So how do you build the cortisol back up in your body?
Rest.
Oh.
Sleep.
Oh.
Rest.
Okay.
Yep. So you don't.
The opposite of running around.
Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
Got it.
So, and that's the other thing, that if you, because you need your immune system to fight infection, if you're busy all the time, you're more likely to get sick because the cortisol is not as available to take care of your immune system.
So if you're burning the candle at both ends and you're getting a limited amount of sleep, then you're making yourself more susceptible to getting sick.
Absolutely.
There you go.
That is true. So, so the thing is, when you use a cortisone, based steroid in your nose, you're suppressing the immune system in your nose. So you have inflammation in your nose that's happening, you know, because you have a cold or you have a sinus infection or you have allergies. And then you put a steroid in there and it's suppressing the immune system and it will reduce the inflammation so you can breathe better, but it's also suppressing the immune system. So guess what you're more likely to get if you use a steroid inhaler?
Well, you're going to get more of the same, right?
You're going to get sick.
Right.
You're going to get infections. You're going to be more likely to get colds. You're going to be more likely to get yeast infections. You're going to be more likely to get mold growing in your nose.
So don't do that.
Right, that you would think, right? I know. I'm not a big fan of steroid inhalers.
I know that.
And yet there are some people who have such severe, they just haven't been able to put it together any other way to get to calm down their asthma or their allergies or their sinusitis. So they wind up using the steroids, and the steroids work. They do work in the short run, but you pay a price for them. I was looking in a patient's nose yesterday, and he uses a steroid nasal spray, and he had an ulceration in his nose.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they're erosive. They eat away at tissue. That's what they do. They're catabolic steroids. They break tissue down. So even though they suppress the immune system in a location, they eat away at the tissue. So one of the things you can get if you use steroid nasal sprays all the time is ulcerations in your nose, bleeding.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But now you gave me a nasal spray.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was having a cold that wouldn't let go or something that wouldn't let go.
Yeah.
And that has what in it?
It has xylitol in it. So xylitol is a sugar alcohol. Sugar alcohols are very interesting, and especially xylitol. So xylitol is a natural substance. It can be extracted from birch, and it can be synthesized as well, but it's often extracted from birch and from other plants. So with sugar alcohol, what does that mean? So sugar, you have your monosaccharides and your disaccharides and your polysaccharides. Anyway, so table sugar is sucrose. Mm-hmm. It has two saccharides in it. It has two monosaccharides in it, fructose and glucose. And so for something to be an alcohol, now we think of alcohol as, you know, we're getting buzzed, we're drinking our beer, whatever.
Right.
So when you...
Moonshine.
Yeah, whatever. So moonshine, if you're not careful, can have methanol in it, which is very bad for you.
Right.
But mostly it's supposed to have ethanol in it. And that's when you're talking about having a drink, having a glass of wine, having your vodka, whatever. That's got ethanol in it. And a little bit of ethanol is not a bad thing unless you're an alcoholic.
Right.
Okay. So we refer to that colloquially as alcohol.
Right.
When the stuff that you use for disinfecting, we refer to colloquially as rubbing alcohol.
Okay.
And rubbing alcohol is not ethanol. It's isopropyl alcohol.
Right.
Yeah. So the difference between ethanol and methanol, ethanol, and isopropyl is 1, 2, and 3 carbons. So methanol has 1 carbon in it. Ethanol has 2. And propanol has 3.
Okay.
Yeah. So why that's called isopropyl alcohol because of where... So what makes a thing an alcohol is there's a little group on it called a hydrogen and an oxygen stuck together that it's stuck to one of the carbons, and that makes it into an alcohol. Now, I think that isopropyl alcohol, and I need to know the ring structure of isopropyl alcohol, but, yeah, we'll see if we can come up with that. The structure...
So not all alcohols are developed the same way. And this is like a development process that they do when they're I don't understand how they manufacture it in different ways.
Here we want to see the ring structure. Okay. So isopropyl alcohol. So alcohol is going to, so the reason it's called isopropyl alcohol is because of where the hydroxyl group is located. So here's how it goes. An alcohol has an OH group, what we call a hydroxyl group. It's just a little hydrogen and oxygen atom stuck together, and it's stuck onto one of the carbons. So methane has only one carbon in it. So you stick an alcohol group on it, onto that carbon. Now it's called methanol. Then you have ethanol. You stick an hydroxyl group onto one of the two carbons that are stuck together. Now it's ethanol. Alcohol, so isopropyl alcohol, which is rubbing alcohol, has three carbons in it. So there's a possibility it could be stuck to one of the carbons on the end or the carbon in the middle. So the carbon on the end one, that's called propanol. And isopropyl alcohol is actually properly named propane 2-ol, because the hydroxyl group is stuck in the middle, all right? Because it's a chain of three carbons, so the alcohol's in the middle, and that's rubbing alcohol. They're all alcohols simply because of that hydroxyl group, but the ethanol you can consume a little bit and be okay. The others are toxic, so you don't consume them. Now, a sugar alcohol is a sugar, so it has a sugar structure. So you have something like glucose or sucrose, and then there's one of those hydroxyl groups stuck onto it, and now it's a sugar alcohol. The neat thing about sugar alcohols is they're not well absorbed in our bodies, which means if you take a sugar alcohol and you eat too much of it, guess what you get?
Oh, I don't know.
Gas.
Gas.
Because it goes right through you. It doesn't get absorbed.
Oh,
I see. So that's what happens. So the other neat thing is that when living systems, you know, micro living systems take up sugar alcohols, they'll take it up because it's like, you look, sugar, I can use that for energy. Then it takes it up and it doesn't work and it kills them. It takes it up and it actually destroys the cell. So xylitol is very helpful as an antimicrobial. And one of the things that, so xylitol will directly kill microorganisms. It'll kill bacteria and viruses and fungus. And the other neat thing that it does is it breaks apart biofilm. So biofilm, one of the good examples of biofilm is plaque on your teeth. So when you have dental caries, when you have, you know, strep mutans in your mouth making, multiplying, making bacteria, one of the ways it protects itself is it makes a protein called biofilm. And if you use xylitol in your toothpaste or use a xylitol rinse or you suck on xylitol candies, it will kill the bacteria and also break apart the biofilm. So I gave you a nasal spray that has xylitol in it. So it doesn't do much for inflammation, but the thing is, what we don't realize is if you have a cold or a virus, there's always stuff growing in your nose. Everybody has mold in their nose. And we have more mold in our nose in Connecticut because it's a damp environment. And unless you keep your house pristinely clean, there's going to be mold in your house. There's going to be dust. There's going to be mold. And there are, in fact, molds that live in concert with dust mites. You'll get dust and mold. You get a 1-2 punch, dust and mold together. And if you don't clean your house often because you're too busy, you're going to be exposed to that more, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the indoor toxin environment thing.
Yeah.
And so if you've got that growing in your nose and you've got a sinus infection, and then there are other bacteria that are ambient that just kind of live in your nose and they get to overgrow because you just never got the inflammation down. And in your case, you probably have a lot of scarring and perhaps polyps in your nose. And that's why you get these sinus infections that last and last.
Could be.
Yeah, that you just have a lot of blockage in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you would probably benefit, unfortunately, from, you know.
Surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah, because you've just had so much sinusitis
over
the years. It has to do with the shape of your nose and the shape of your sinuses.
Big.
Here's the thing. The actual structure on your face is big, but I think that your skull is a little on the small side. And so your sinuses are probably more compact than mine, because I don't get nearly the sinus problems that you do.
Yeah.
I might definitely get runny noses and I have allergies, but I don't get the sinus infections like you do.
I've had them my whole life.
But I think I have bigger sinuses.
Right.
So when your depending on your structure, your actual structure of your face and your skull, that's going to speak to how big your sinuses are. And if your sinuses are on the small side, then the mucous membranes are going to be a little closer together. They get inflamed, and they're going to be more likely to block stuff off. And then the longer infection is hanging around in there, what happens is your body tries to fight it, and it spits out lysozymes. You know, your white blood cells are going to spit out lysozymes to try to kill the infection that's in there. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get scarring. You get inflammation, and then you ultimately get scarring, and you can get overgrowth of tissue, and you can get polyps. So the sinuses are going to be less patent, and you're going to be more prone to getting infections, and you're going to have that situation where you just feel like you can't get it out. And that happens to you a lot.
Happens a lot.
So we got you that Eustachy device. We got you that device.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because it's just a little device that blows an air current into your sinuses, and you blow the air current in, and you swallow while you're doing it.
Yeah, you block off so it can't come out. So you're just putting your air in,
and then you swallow.
And when you swallow it, it blocks the ability. It lets the air go into the eustachian tubes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and it opens up your eustachian tubes.
And you need to do this seated, by the way. I've learned very, very quickly that this is not something you do while standing up.
Do you get dizzy?
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I almost fell down one time because what happens is my sinuses are so blocked and my eustachian tubes are so blocked that there's a lot of inner ear pressure.
Yes.
And when you get that, you get lightheaded and dizzy. It affects your balance.
That makes sense. So the eustachian tube, by the way, is a tube that goes from your throat to your ear, and it's there to help to release pressure, and it can get inflamed. So when you feel like your ears are blocked, that's what's actually going on. Your eustachian tube is inflamed. So this device, this neat device, Eustachy, that you can get, helps to, if you blow this current into your nose and you swallow, and it helps to open up the eustachian tubes. We have a maneuver in naturopathic medicine that we can do. It's hard to do because it's hard to locate, where you put a glove on, you put a nitrile glove or, you know, a protective glove on. Then you put a little drop of essential oil on it, some like opening essential oil, like you can use anise oil or eucalyptus oil, thyme oil, and any kind of nice volatile oil. And you put it on the tip of your finger, and then you go in and you massage the opening of the eustachian tube, and it can open it up. It's called an endonasal. But the thing is, it's hard to do because it's behind the person's tonsil, and you can have a strong coughing or gag reflex when you do that. But some people can tolerate it, and it's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing you can do is you can see your local chiropractor.
Yes.
And they can help manipulate that to a point where they can help you out too.
Oh yeah, that's true. So gargling with salt water and using the neti pot, you can also take a cotton swab and dip it in a tiny bit of essential oil as well as salt water and swab your nasal mucosa out. That's because for some people they just won't do nasal sprays or neti pots, and so I'll invite them to swab their nose out.
Yeah, I'm long beyond that.
Yeah. And so you have to work with people where they're at. And then if you don't even want to put anything in your nose, then the next step is to do, there's some very simple things you can do where you get a water bottle and you put a few drops of a nice volatile oil. Eucalyptus is a great one to use. Put that in the water bottle. And when you get in the shower, spray the shower and inhale the steam. That's something you could be doing. Have a water bottle in the shower with some eucalyptus oil in it. We've got some eucalyptus oil.
Okay.
And when you get in the shower, you have the water bottle and you spray it while you're showering. And
a spray bottle.
Yes, and you inhale the steam from the eucalyptus.
Let's do that. We'll give that a try.
Because when you inhale volatile oils, they're antimicrobial. They get into your lungs and your sinuses and they'll kill stuff for you.
Yeah.
So sage would be really good. Sage oil would be really good. Clary sage, plain old sage. Eucalyptus would be great. Thyme oil would be great. Those are all really good.
I also, had me put a drop or two of tea tree oil in my neti pot.
Tea tree oil too. Yeah, that's another one too. Yeah,
okay.
Tea tree oil. Be careful when you put essential oils in the neti pot. One to two and that's it.
Right.
Really, a little goes a long way.
Yeah. And it's intense. I mean, it's really intense. One drop and you can really...
Yes,
you know,
and it's it kills stuff.
Yeah.
I think we should get some thyme oil. That would be a good thing,
Let's
too.
Let's do it.
Yeah. The other thing you can do that has really great antimicrobial properties, I really like black cumin seed oil, and I forget to take it, but black cumin seed oil has a lot of antimicrobial, has volatile oils in it. That's part of why it's so good. I don't know if it would be good to do a neti pot with black cumin seed oil, but it might be okay. It's just that it's very oily. It's full of essential fats. I don't know if it's the best thing.
You can do the spray bottle thing. I like that.
But you can eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can totally eat it. It's not an essential oil. It's just an oil. It's just a plant oil.
Cumin.
Black cumin, right.
Black cumin.
Yes.
Right. Or we could make more food with cumin seed and
yes.
that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You can,
right.
when you do, when
I haven't
you
made
use,
that in a while. Well,
when you use herbs and mm-hmm. spices have wonderful compounds, they have wonderful components to them. Herbs with volatile oils like thyme and cumin and cardamom and cinnamon and caraway and basil and oregano, they all have volatile, and those are just examples, and there's many more. They all have volatile oils in them. Volatile oils do a lot of good things for you. They are antimicrobial, and they are also a little bit irritating. So they get into your digestive system, and they move things along. So if you, they help your motility. So if you eat bland food, your digestion is generally not going to be as good as if you use spices.
Right.
Because if you use spices, they're both antimicrobial and stimulating to the digestion. So that's really that's a really good idea. The other thing I was going to say is, if you don't want to put stuff in your nose, you can do steam inhalations.
Mm-hmm.
So steam inhalations are nice because all you have to do is you take water and you boil it on the stove. Then you take it off the heat. You never put your face over a pot that's actively boiling.
Right.
So you take it off the heat so it's steaming. You can put a few drops of essential oil in it. Again, thyme oil, rosemary oil, tea tree oil, eucalyptus, lemon eucalyptus. We've got some lemon eucalyptus now, which, by the way, is supposed to be good for preventing mosquito bites. I'm not convinced.
Tried that. Didn't
tried
work.
Tried it. It wasn't working. So I was sitting out there with this beautiful lemon eucalyptus spray that I got. And
Mama Mosquito came along and went, this tastes good.
They laughed at me.
Yeah, they laughed
at
you.
It wasn't nice.
No.
Yeah. I'm thinking it might be better to take the actual lemon eucalyptus and put it into the other with the high citronella content and rose geranium, and that works better.
Okay.
So anyway, then you just take that pot that has been boiling and you've taken off the heat, put it on a burner that's not heating, and put your face over that with a towel, and then inhale the steam that way. And again, it's going to open up your sinuses. It reduces inflammation, and it's going to kill. It's antimicrobial. So you also have to remember that you can get stomach bugs this time of year. Again, fecal oral. Even if people are careful about washing their hands, you can still get buggies on your hands that you leave on the counter. You touch the counter that someone else touched. You touch your mouth. Off you go. That's the fecal oral route of I know it sounds gross, but it's really not unusual. And you can get, sometimes it's hard to tell if you have food poisoning versus a GI bug. And it can be either way. But you want to be careful about that. And again, you're going to be less likely to get sick with that if you gargle and use the neti pot. Both of those are going to be helpful. But with that, that's why it's a good idea, once again, to eat essential oils. And the essential oils you're going to get from eating foods, spices in your food, herbs and spices, those work very nicely. And also to regularly consume probiotic. You're going to regularly consume probiotic if you eat organic produce, because organic produce is going to have soil organisms living on it already. You'll get it if you get actual fermented foods, so your kimchi and your unpasteurized sauerkraut, other fermented vegetables, kombucha, and yes, even some alcohol. If you have a nice yeasty beer, it's going to have some probiotic for you, as is wine. A lot of beer and wine, though, has been pasteurized. So once something's been pasteurized, you know, beer, especially in the U.S., has been pasteurized, unfortunately, and then you're not going to get as much antimicrobial effect. If you're not dairy intolerant, you can consume yogurt and kefir, and those can be really helpful. And if you are dairy intolerant, you can get non-dairy fermented items, all the vegetables. There are non-dairy, kombucha is non-dairy. And there are other fermented beverages you can get. There's kefir that's water kefir that has no dairy in it. And you can also, Have I worn out my antibiotics? And you can take probiotic pills. Absolutely. You can take probiotic pills, and that can help to prevent digestive. So if you consume fermented foods, you're going to be less likely to get GI infections. I have a great combination that's a take on something called Robert's formula. Robert's formula is an old herbal formula that usually contains echinacea and golden seal. It's got marshmallow root, slippery elm. It can have cabbage or actual glutamine in it. It usually has geranium in it. That's one of the features of Robert's formula, has geranium in it. So it has all kinds of herbs that are blended together, and they do wonderful things like stimulate your immune system. They're antimicrobial, and they're soothing and astringent. It's a great formula, Robert's formula. And you can get different versions of Robert's formula. You can get it mixed together in a tincture. You can get pills that have Robert's formula in it. And I'll give that out when people have GI bugs. And it works pretty, if it's going to work, it works pretty quickly. People get better from their GI bugs in a day or two. It's really great. And you often wonder, would they have gotten better anyway? But a lot of times they take the Robert's formula and they feel better after taking a couple of doses. It's really nice. Whoops. Yep.
That's good.
Yeah. So, yeah, GI bugs, we've definitely seen those around too. The GI bugs and the colds and coughs, I'm starting to see them already. So if you like to start doing your gargling and netting as a way of keeping yourself healthy, when should you start doing that? Now's good. Yeah. So there's a few things to help keep your immune system going. I thought I would talk about a couple of other things, but we ran out of time.
Yeah, so. I was going to mention to you about the large number of students walking around with their heads down.
Yes, that's interesting. So, yeah, what did you see?
What I see is that I find students walking around. Well, there's obviously we're in a sea of students right now, and none of them are looking where they're going because they're all looking at their device,
yes,
which seems to be a popular thing to do, and their necks are like, you know, run down, and it's like that's got to be hard on your neck. It seems like that is going to create a chiropractic problem in the future.
I wonder. Well, there's definitely some cell phone related, there's definitely some cell phone related musculoskeletal issues that are going on, and neck is one and thumbs are another.
Really?
Yeah.
Thumbs too. Oh my gosh.
For sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes sense. I hadn't thought of thumbs, but
yeah. So there's definitely, if you go, and that's something maybe we'll go into it next week.
We might want to pull a show on that one. We could definitely spend a lot of time on that.
I have in front of me an article in PubMed. So PubMed, by the way, if you ever want to look at PubMed, I think you can sign, you can get an NCBI account, the National Library of Medicine, NIH. It's just a compendium of lots and lots of abstracts and articles, medical articles. I have an article in front of me that comes from the International Journal of Health Sciences, and it's called Health Risks Associated with Mobile Phone Use. Yeah.
Amazing.
So,
Yeah. I mean, so it seems like it would be a problem because, you know, I'm amazed. What really amazes me is the peripheral vision of a youngster must be better than that of those of us that are older, because they seem to be able to not run into things even though they have their heads down the whole time.
Yeah, that's probably true, because people are more likely to get, you know, in things like glaucoma and macular degeneration. Well, glaucoma is something that will affect your peripheral vision. If you have increased intraocular pressure, and the older you get, the more likely you are to get that. And if you spend your time not eating things with vitamin C in them, you're not going to have as good circulation to your eyes. Vitamin C, you can take high-dose vitamin C and decrease your intraocular pressure. So yeah, we can talk about that, the health risk associated from cell phones. We'll get to that. Maybe we'll get to that next week. All right. So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and I have been here with Ron Meniza. if you would like to write to me at radionaturopath@gmail.com, I'd be happy to take your questions and answer them on our next show. If you'd like to listen to this show at any other time, you can check out our podcast at www.whus.org. Go to the talk header and click on Radio Naturopath. You can also check out my Facebook page, Franz Dorch, ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath, and contact me on Twitter and Instagram at Franz Dorch, ND. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath here at the University of Connecticut, and we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.